One of them.
Psalm 35 is an intense and insistent plea for Yahweh to intervene on the side of the psalmist against his enemies, who are bringing false accusations against him. A lot of the psalms are like that. Especially tragic is that his enemies are people whom he has supported when they were in trouble. It's quite a poignant part in this psalm. The people who are hurt, and this is often the case with us, isn't it? The people who most hurt you are the people you've most loved, if they hurt you, don't they? I mean, a lot of people hurt you, it doesn't matter much, if you hardly know them. But when someone really close to you, or a close friend, or I imagine in marriage breakdown, you know, there can be such pain and so on. Well, especially tragic is that the enemies of this psalmist are people whom he supported when they were in trouble. There are three movements, each of which ends in a call to praise God. In describing his painful situations, he uses images taken from the war and from the hunt. Praying this psalm as a Christian, we might note the following statement from Peter's first letter, chapter 3, verse 18, where he says, Christ also suffered for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, the one doing God's will for the ones who were not doing God's will. Righteous and just are equal words for this word, in order to bring you to God. So Jesus was hurt by the very people he was loving, but he loved through it and so offered us redemption. So the psalm, pretty well without comment, the first six verses. Yahweh, he says, contend with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of shield and buckler. Rise up in my defense. Take up the spear and block the way against my pursuers. Say to me, I am your deliverance. Let those who seek after my life be put to shame and dishonor. Let those who devise evil against me be turned back and confounded. Let them be like chaff before the wind, with the angel of Yahweh scattering them. Let their way be dark and slippery, with the angel of Yahweh pursuing them. I talked about the angel of Yahweh in the last psalm. Let's look at it a bit more fully now. In the New Testament, Matthew 1, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Then it goes on, there's three more texts, all through chapter 1 and chapter 2. The angel of the Lord four times appears to Joseph in a dream. So what does that mean? Does that mean he had a dream and one of the myriads of angels, the spiritual beings that God created, came down and spoke to him? That's not Matthew's intention. Matthew's talking about God revealing God's will to Matthew. But in perfect Jewish understanding, he's not going to say God appeared to Matthew, because how does God appear? You know, God is transcendent of everything. So if God is going to speak in perfect biblical language, Matthew says, the angel of the Lord. An appearance of the Lord. It's the Lord, but it's an appearance of the Lord that comes to him. A manifestation of the Lord, a message of the Lord. Are you getting the message? So know that it's God speaking to Matthew, to Joseph, not mediated through any creature, but God, and God speaks to us too, in our hearts. The end of Matthew's gospel, once again he says, suddenly, this is after the death and burial of Jesus, chapter 8, 28, verse 2, suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descending from heaven came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. Well, you wouldn't get a video of that. You couldn't take a photo. Sit there while I get a photo. It's not saying that. It's, and none of the others describe, this is the closest you get to a description of the resurrection, but it's not a description of it, it's a theological statement of it at the highest level. He's saying that God was the one who emptied the tomb by raising Jesus from it. And to sit on something means you've got, like the judge sits on the bench, it's power, it's the king sits on the throne. This is God dominating darkness and death. It's not a little picture of a little Botticelli angel squatting with legs crossed on top of a rock. Are you going okay? You get me? It's big stuff. Big, big, big. Now, what about Luke, chapter 2, verse 9? Luke is not a Jew, he's a Greek writer. He's a Syrian from Antioch, probably, and he is not as Semite in his world, but he was welcomed into a Semitic group of people who were Christians, so he learned a lot, because he's a student, he's a historian, so he's quite able, just as I'm able, to learn other cultures. Luke was too. So he's full of biblical language too. But it isn't quite the same as Matthew, because he's coming from a different, he's got Jewish thoughts as a second language, if you know what I mean, rather than coming right through his veins from childhood. Well, he has, chapter 1, he talks about the angel Gabriel appearing to Mary. Remember, I haven't put that there, because he actually names the angel Gabriel, the angel Michael, the angel Raphael, and you've heard of a few others, Ariel and so on. These are names, but these are not little creatures either. I mean, the Bible isn't telling me that there's God and there's an angel called Michael, and there's an angel called Raphael, and there's an angel called Gabriel, and there's angels with other names, and there's millions of them, but we don't know most of their names. That's not the point. The angel of God, it's God, but it's the aspects of God. Raphael is God as healing. Gabriel, Gibor in Hebrew, means the warrior. God's strength, God as powerful, is appearing to Mary. So it's the power that you're focusing on, the power to bring life in the Messiah. And Michael is a question. Who is like God? God is the transcendent, but not transcendent, of course, but the one who is transcendent, and nothing's like him, and nothing can stand up against God. Mikael, who is like God? These are colours of the one mystery, like the rainbow. So once again, when the angel Gabriel comes to Mary, please don't think God thought, oh, well, I'm too busy, so I'll send an angel. So the angel says, oh, well, I've got nothing to do, how about if I go? So the angel goes down and whispers in Mary's ear. In the meantime, God's up there talking to St. Patrick. He didn't exist at that time, did he? Anyhow, talking to Catherine of Egypt. Okay, so whatever's going on. No, this is God speaking. God speaking. I am with you. The Lord is with you. I am with you. So on. So watch the language and don't let the language limit your imagination. It's God speaking to Mary. It's a love pact between God and Mary. Just as God made a love pact with all you people, those of you who are mothers, when you conceived. Well, you all did. Well, here, the angel, like chapter 2, after the birth of Jesus, an angel of the Lord stood before the shepherds, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. That's God present in their life. Acts chapter 5, verse 19, during the night an angel of the Lord opened the prison doors and brought them out. In other words, God somehow released them from prison. Acts 8:26, an angel of the Lord said to Philip, get up and go towards the south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. Is God moving, inspiring Philip, as he inspires all of us to do certain things? And I bet you've done it too. Sometimes you think, I wonder, and you think of going a certain way, and then something happens, and you think, if I hadn't come here, I wouldn't have. And of course God's inspiring us all the time. Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared, and light shone in the cell. That's when Peter was in prison. An angel of the Lord struck Herod down, and he was eaten by worms and died. Well, he didn't have an angel rush into the room and belt him over the back of the head with a bloomin' rolling pin. It means that he was struck down by God. Well, actually, he had syphilis, so he did a bit of his own striking down anyhow. But that's enough. So, verse 7. Without cause they hid their net to catch me. For nothing they dug a pit to take my life. And that's alluded to or quoted by Jesus in the Last Supper, John 15:25. He says, it was to fulfill the word that is written in their law, they hated me without cause. And that seems to be an allusion, a reference back to our Psalm 35, verse 7. And that just reminds us that Jesus read the Psalms and John, the beloved disciple, read the Psalms. So if you're reading the Psalms and praying them, you're in good company. A lot of people have done it. And verse 8 and the following now. Let ruin come on them unawares. Well, the psalmists aren't all as nice as Jesus. Don't expect them to be. Let the net that they hid ensnare them. So they put the net out, you know, so the lion will come through and land in the pit. And then they've just fixed all the net up. It's all hidden and all obscure to catch him. And then they take a step backwards and fall into the net and end up in the pit themselves. So that's what he wants. Let them fall into the pit to their own ruin. Then my whole being will rejoice in Yahweh, exulting in his deliverance. All my bones will say, O Lord, who is like you? You deliver the poor from those too strong for them, the needy and the poor from those who despoil them. So that's the first part. Now, the second part of our psalm, verse 11. I think it reads for itself, I'll just say it. Malicious witnesses rise up. They accuse me of things about which I know nothing. They repay me evil for good. They repay me evil for good. That's getting close to the pain of this psalm. They leave me defenseless. As for me, when they were sick, I wore sackcloth. I afflicted myself with fasting. I prayed with my head bowed to my bosom, as though I grieved for a friend or a brother. I went about as one who laments for a mother, bowed down and in mourning. So that's how he treated them. But when I faltered, they gathered in glee. They gathered together against me. Can't understand it. Well, we never can understand it when someone we've loved turns against us. Ruffians whom I didn't know tore at me without ceasing. Lacking piety, they mocked more and more, gnashing their teeth at me. And so he prays, how long, O Lord, will you look on? Rescue me from their ravages. Rescue my life from the lions. Then I will thank you in the great congregation. In the mighty throng I will praise you. When the Greek Septuagint, the Jewish-Greek version of the Hebrew Bible, in the second century when it was translated, the word for the great congregation, the Kahal, was ecclesia, which is a civil term for a gathering of people in Athens to vote, or in Rome to listen to the senator do something. It's an ecclesia, and a gathering of the free citizens of the city. Well, that same word was used for the gathering of those freed by Christ. The Kahal, they called themselves the freed ones, the ecclesia, the ones called out. Sometimes that word congregation is translated, as I mentioned on an earlier occasion, by the word synagoge, synagogue. In fact, in James's letter, synagogue is the word we translate church. So as then in history, gradually, synagogue started to be used for the Jewish gathering and ecclesia, church, for the Christian gathering. But that took a while in history. Part 3 and the concluding section of our psalm. Do not let my treacherous enemies rejoice over me, or those who hate me without cause enjoy themselves at my expense. For they do not speak peace. They conceive deceitful words against those who are quiet in the land. They open wide their mouths against me. They say, aha, aha, we saw you do it. And so he pleads, Yahweh, you have seen. Do not be silent. O Lord, don't be far from me. Wake up. Bestir yourself for my defense, for my cause, my God and my Lord. Vindicate me, Yahweh, my God, according to your justice. Don't let them rejoice over me. Don't let them say in their hearts, ah, we have what we have always been waiting for. Don't let them say, we've devoured you. Let all those who rejoice at my calamity be put to shame and confusion. Let those who exalt themselves against me be clothed with shame and dishonor. Let those who desire justice for me shout for joy and be glad and say evermore, great is Yahweh, who delights in the welfare of his servant. Then my tongue shall tell of your justice and praise you all day long.